You are listening to the Power of Why podcast.
All the roles that I've had, and you probably heard this on your show a lot, Naomi, I've gotten them because of, you know, somebody who I knew. Because it's hard to have a non-traditional path going through traditional means of applying for jobs. I had no direct HR experience on my CV. I would have never been screened in for an HR role. There was a time when I was at the NRC when I was asked to take on the construction research portfolio, which is 300, many of them mechanical engineering PhDs from around the world. I was asked to do that for an assignment. You know, I had no construction experience. I would have never had that job if somebody there didn't know me and know how I thought organizationally, how I led people, and how I thought about, you know, moving that team forward.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Power of Why podcast. My name is Naomi Hiley, and today we are here with Kira Torco. Kira, it's so great to have you here. Welcome to the show.
It's great to be here, Naomi. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. I'm so excited to have this conversation with you. You have such a storied career and life journey in so many different industries, and the way that they come together, I think, will offer some really meaningful insights for listeners. So for the audience, I want to provide you a little bit of context into Kira's story. So Kira Torco has over 25 years of experience across many different sectors, from leadership roles at government agencies focused on science and tech research, national sports and coaching organizations, to the banking sector, in addition to small tech companies early in her career. Kira's journey has been filled with opportunities to hone her skills in team management and organizational growth, and also supporting others in their own development. Today, Kira is Ascent's Chief People Leader, who brilliantly fosters a culture of growth, excellence, and high performance. And her dedication has been such a key in making Ascent a place for top talent. Kira is also a board member at the University of Ottawa Heart Institute and chairs the Ottawa Heart Institute Research Corporation alongside her active and deep love for community sports. What I'm excited about in this conversation is to really delve into Kira's people-centric approach when it comes to HR and her focus on coaching and connecting with the people around her. So Kira, again, welcome to the show. I would love for you to start by sharing a little bit about your origin story and how you grew up.
Great. Thanks, Naomi. And my teenage boys will be thrilled to hear that I have an origin story. I think that's a Marvel comic reference. But I started, I grew up on the West Coast of Canada, and not a lot of people move from the West to the East. You know, it's a bit of it's idyllic on Vancouver Island. But I was raised on a farm. And I think that's really foundational to kind of my belief around hard work paying off. And, you know, on a farm, you just do what needs to get done. You roll your sleeves up and you know that rewards will come eventually, you know, and there's kind of probably a funny metaphor there about crops and farming, but I won't delve into that super early. And so I grew up on the West Coast. I went to university in Victoria. I didn't know what I wanted to do. My family wasn't one that talked about university. I didn't even know what options were available to me. And someone came to the school and presented about computer science and business. And I thought, great, the one person who came and presented to my high school. And so I started out in computer science and realized probably by the second year, this was in the early 90s, that I didn't want to program for my whole career. So I moved into business and got a business degree. I'm also an accountant. So I got my accounting designation, but never practiced really either computer science or accounting. Just always use them as kind of secrets in my back pocket. So if I'm being asked about something, I can pull out, you know, an accounting reference. So I started out my career kind of in a blend of things, moved to Ottawa with my partner. At the time, we came out here in the high tech boom. We were both in a tech space, lived here for a little bit, knew we wanted to start a family, and we were both in a pretty risky, you know, tech does have, you know, great rewards, but also has risk associated with it. And so we made the decision that one of us needed to have a little bit more stability. And that's when I made a choice to go into the National Research Council, because there was still a really heavy tech involvement, but had a bit more stability. And then my career just kind of moved around from there. So that, I would say, is the origin story.
Yeah, I didn't know that you grew up on a farm. I wonder how much of, like, if you could share a little bit, were you encouraged to color outside of the lines? Were you encouraged to take over from, like, what you would be doing in Victoria? Or what was the nature of your childhood years and how you spent your time?
Wow, it seems a long time ago now, but one of the things that stays with me is I get up every morning at 5 a.m. It doesn't matter what time I go to bed. I think my most productive hours are that time early in the morning. And my parents worked full time. So we had 180 acres and we all had to work on this farm when we weren't in school. So maybe if I think back to what that might have formed, you know, an incredible ability to multitask, because we were always really, really busy. I don't know that I was encouraged to color inside or outside the lines. I think for me, that just developed myself when I, you know, had a chance to observe others around me who were doing cool, different things, because the norm always seemed kind of boring.
Can you tell me a little bit about, and I think this, like, reference, you mentioned like a bunch of farming references, and I think that relates to, like, you know, just planting seeds and seeing the fruits of that labor later and things taking time. But I also think about, like, working with your hands and being active, right? You worked for a sports and coaching organization as well throughout your career, and you do have this love for community sports and just being active. And so maybe you could share a little bit about more of your career journey, but what were the draws to health research and sports organizations and banking? Did it have anything to do with those sectors, or was it more about the leadership that you would be called to do in those roles?
Wow, that's a great question, Naomi. And I can think there's about 1,000 things moving on around my brain right now. So let me do my best to try to come up with a few, you know, useful insights there. I was always an athlete growing up. I was always in the outdoors. You know, I was always playing basketball and field hockey and softball. And I was a pretty good athlete. Then I had an injury. And when I had an injury, the time at that, there wasn't really the same kind of physio and support around you. So my competitive sports career at that point in time had to take a back seat. And I started coaching pretty early on after that. I still played sports, but it's hard when you have a competitive mindset to not play sports as competitively as you had in the past. You know, I tried to do it once and I hurt myself again. And so, but I wanted the thrill that came with the win, and I wanted the thrill that came with being part of a team. And so I think throughout my career, I always looked for great leadership, because I had that in team sport growing up. And I loved being a coach. And so I'd coached various different sports. You know, what's really funny is that I coached both my boys when they were very young, but I all of a sudden became not a very good coach for them when they became early teenagers. It's like, well, your mom was a very competitive athlete, and she was the chief operating officer of the Coaching Association of Canada. I might be somewhat qualified to do this. And so unfortunately, that part of my coaching, you know, doesn't happen as much anymore. But when I joined the Coaching Association of Canada, and I know, Naomi, I'm kind of going a little bit all over the place here.
No, that's good.
It's a really interesting story about developing your network. I mentioned before I joined the NRC because I was really interested. I loved the tech they were doing. Like, working with world-class researchers is amazing. Like, you have to be on your game all the time. And over the period of the 12 years that I was there, I had 2 kids. I had 8 different jobs, you know, constantly moving and evolving. But I got to a point where I knew that I'd reached my cap there. I don't have a PhD in molecular sciences, and I'd done, I thought, the things I could do. And when I started to think about what was next, you know, I had applied for a job, you know, in a sports organization, because we had done a little bit of work with them at the NRC in helping create, you know, great technologies for Canadian athletes. And I thought that was a really interesting organization. So the first time I'd put together a CV in years, because I'd always, up to that point in time, been given opportunities because of who I knew. And, you know, I had been successful at something and they would bring me in to do something else. Yeah. But this was the first time it wasn't that way. And I also had a career coach at that point in time as well, who was really helping me think about things differently. And so I went to this interview and I thought, you know, I nailed that interview. Like, I've got this. And they phoned me to say, you know, you didn't get the job. There was somebody who just had a lot of really specific knowledge of that organization in that space that they were going to bring in. But this woman said to me, but we were really impressed and we're going to find you a job in sport. And I thought, the nicest no I have ever, ever heard. And I left thinking, wow, I'm gonna do that for other women. I go away. I think my family went away for March break. I came home and there was a call and they said, oh, hi, it was this person again. We have found you another place to interview. And that was at the Coaching Association. And wow. So I spent 3 years working both with, for the Canadians listening, you know, Timbits, you know, hockey coaches and, you know, World Cup and Olympic level coaches, and just helping to drive great coaching and great leadership to just create better Canadians and better humans across the country. So I got to live that like every day. And it was a very purpose-driven, valuable part of my career for me.
Wow, what a story. It's not something that you could ever plan for.
No.
You know, honestly, like something I'm so fascinated by you and so many of the people who come on the show is their unconventional career paths have almost become conventional, because the amount of people that have just trusted those twists and turns and really delivered in those environments thrived, and they also poured into the people around them too. I'm wondering, with this most recent move into the chief people officer, the chief people leader role that you're in right now, how have you brought in that like coaching mindset and that people-centric mindset into your role, which is very much focused on developing the people who are in your organization? And what does that look like at a technology and supply chain company?
Another really great question. And again, my head's just going around. Well, and you know, it's interesting about my role at Ascent. It also came because of somebody I knew, and I'll come back to that in a moment. But at Ascent, I now wear two hats. So I'm both the chief people officer and the chief of staff, you know, to the ship team. And so it means my coaching sometimes covers a broader perspective, you know, as I'm thinking differently about the organization. But, you know, one of the things maybe I'll talk about is, you know, how I actually got to Ascent, and if you're okay with that, Naomi, and translate that into kind of what things look like on a day-to-day basis, is that it was somebody I had been on a board with probably 12 or 15 years ago. We just happened to catch up, and I was telling her, I was trying to think about what was next for me. And she said, you should meet, you know, this person at Ascent. And I was like, supply chain? You're like, I'm in national sport. Why would I want to go into supply chain? And so I had a chance to connect with the CEO at that point in time. And long story short, you know, I was offered a chief people officer role, or at that time it was the VP of employee experience. And I said, I've never been, you know, solely in HR. You know, I've led it, being a chief operating officer or being a general manager. I've led HR, but I haven't solely focused on it. And then I started to do some research on some really big companies in the US and the path that their chief people officer had taken in. I was seeing a lot more now that they weren't coming from traditional pathways. They were bringing a lot of different experience. And the phrase that my boss Andrew and I use is that it's my job to think about business puzzles through the lens of people. Yeah. And so I'm able to bring knowledge from, you know, having worked in, you know, technology licensing and commercialization, from driving high performance through coaching, leading a business development team. It just gives me a different insight into the people issues. But, you know, all the roles that I've had, and you've probably heard this on your show a lot, Naomi, I've gotten them because of, you know, somebody who I knew. Because it's hard to have a non-traditional path going through traditional means of applying for jobs. You know, if I think about it, we don't use AI at Ascent to screen CVs, but lots of companies do. Like, I had no direct HR experience on my CV. I would have never been screened in for an HR role. There was a time when I was at the NRC when I was asked to take on the construction research portfolio, which is 300, you know, many of them, you know, mechanical engineering PhDs from around the world. I was asked to do that for an assignment. You know, I had no construction experience. I would have never had that job if somebody there didn't know me and know how I thought organizationally, how I led people, and how I thought about, you know, moving that team forward. And so I think that, you know, what I say often at Ascent is that if we did things the same way as other companies, we would grow at the same speed as other companies. And we're trying to grow faster. Since I've joined the company, there's been a fourfold increase in people and a 10 times increase in revenues. And that's over a period of 5.5 years. You can't always do that being traditional. And so a lot of my coaching is, how do you take what you've got and demonstrate yourself differently? Like, Naomi, what's your unique brand? And how does that show up, you know, in all the things you do so that people remember what Naomi brought to this situation? And so I think for me, thinking of always using that as the lens, and how do I apply something from my experience here to a different place, I think is really meaningful.
Wow, that's a huge testament to opening up how you do things and seeing, okay, like what are the ways that this process may be leaving opportunity on the table that we are not able to access right now, just because of how our processes are shaped up. And I love the way that you brought in so many, like your COO hat. Operations is such a fundamental part of knowing and seeing the intricacies of how your business moves and how decisions are made. And so, of course, that's an asset when you're in the role that you're in right now. I'm wondering, from a design perspective, because you mentioned that you came into the role as the VP of People Experience. An experience. When it comes to designing experiences for development, what are some of the things that you're thinking about and you're asking? And, you know, you mentioned you looked at organizations in the US. Like, what have you seen during your time at Ascent?
You know, a phrase I use quite often is that I do believe culture is the accumulation of meaningful moments, because I think it's not the big values written on your kitchen wall, which we do have, you know, and I think it's important that people are reminded of them, but it's the decisions that you make on a daily basis, and it's how you treat people at all levels of the organization that I think is really, really powerful. You know, everyone must know the phrase, you know, what gets measured gets done. People are driven by targets. And so we're quite purposeful about a target around new adventures in the organization. And that means, you know, somebody who either takes on a changed role in their own team, they have a promotion, they move over to another team, which is something we're seeing a lot more of. And last year, we had close to 23% of our organization took on a new adventure. And we publish the new adventures and we talk about them and we share that data with our teams and we share it with our board. So making sure that people's ability to move is public. I think that's really important. You know, and it is the small things, you know, that I think matter. I was reminded yesterday, and, you know, I think also as leaders, we forget often that a lot of what we do is watched, and people see the small things that I might forget about and not realize is important. So for the last 4 years, I've personally run, and it's been a very manual process, a January health challenge in the company. And we have participants from all over the world. And it's, you know, how much can we walk from Ottawa to Eldoret, Kenya? Because we have hundreds of employees in Kenya. And teams track their steps. And, you know, if you do an hour run, it's equivalent to X number of steps. And I'd see somebody in this challenge because we had these spreadsheets and I'd say, wait a minute, Naomi has increased her step count every day for the last week. Good for her. You know, it's not that she has the most amount of steps, but she's done more every single day. And I would just send like a random weird exercise to people around the world, you know, like they might get like an exercise ball, or they might get, you know, I sent this one where it was a funny like neck exerciser where you put this thing on your head and then you shake your head. And first this year I got so swamped in early January and I didn't run this challenge. And I've had about 10 people reach out to me and say, why aren't you sending weird guests around the world? And I thought, oh my goodness, you know, people pay attention. Yeah. And action is just as much a decision as anything else is. So I do think finding those, you know, when you grow as an organization as much as we have, you know, going from, you know, when I joined under 300 to now over 900, you sometimes lose the ability to do those kind of quirky things that bring people individual joy. And so I try really hard to do those things because I think those make the culture in the organization.
Yeah, what a great way to tie in so many of your worlds into the role that you have right now. I think that's, as someone who's thinking about leadership a lot, and I personally don't think leadership is tied to, you know, your position or your rank. You can be a leader in any position that you hold or title that you have. I'm wondering, when it comes to inspiring or empowering specific teams in the organization and just your people in general, how do the values that an organization has when you're walking into them, how do those align with the specific processes or programs or initiatives that you have in your organization, and how are you looking to align the two? Your values play such a big role into how you think and how you make decisions and what incentives you're really prioritizing. So how do you look at organizational values, and how do you try to align that with developing and supporting your team?
Yeah, you know, a great question. And it's probably even more relevant now that I wear two hats in the organization, both the chief people officer and the chief of staff, because the chief of staff gives me a bit more space to be involved in more operational and organizational initiatives. So I'm able to think about it with more intent now because I have just more tools to be able to do that. And so I think for me, I think my most important roles in the organization is recruiting a leadership team and ensuring that we've got a leadership team that reflect the values of the organization. And so I take that really seriously. And whether we're doing it ourselves or we're working with a recruiter, you know, I'm the first, if not the second interview for any, you know, new leader coming into the organization to make sure that that reflects our values. When I first started at the organization, there were two women who were on the leadership team. And then for a period of time, I was the only female on the leadership team. And now there are four. And I think that, you know, again, it's been, you know, making sure that diverse perspectives, you know, bring different value to whether it be the leadership table. 47% of all people leaders at Ascent are female, which I think is, you know, is really quite powerful that we've got really amazing representation. So we'll make sure that our recruiting practices are aligned with what we are trying to achieve. I think about our performance management practices along those lines. You know, everyone will tell you that it's very rare you let somebody go because of a inability to do the job technically. More often than not, it's because of their behaviors or just how they interact with others. And so we make sure that we take that into really strong account, you know, when we're recruiting. We also, it seems a little bit small, but as I said, I think small moments make the difference. We have a tool that we use at Ascent called Bonusly. So now I'm giving a shout out, you know, to this other SaaS. Bonusly, but it's a peer recognition tool. And we have over 95% usage, both in receiving and giving across the organization, which is like, I guess, like stratospheric levels of usage. And every time you reward somebody with something, you have to use a hashtag. And our hashtags are primarily driven by our values. And so we embed things, whether it be in that tool, we embed our values into our performance reviews, you know, we embed our values into just different community initiatives. So we try to find a way to show what they mean on an everyday decision-making basis.
This episode is brought to you in collaboration with Invest Ottawa, Ottawa's lead economic development agency for knowledge-based industries, and with critical support of the title sponsor of International Women's Month, BDC Capital's Thrive Venture Fund, we teamed up to produce this special podcast series to celebrate women leading in Ottawa. In support of its women founders and owners strategy, Invest Ottawa offers programs and services that enable and accelerate the growth and success of women entrepreneurs from every walk of life. Visit www.investottawa.ca/women to learn more. I'm so glad that you brought up peer recognition tools. So I think it's an underrated process when it comes to actually building a culture of trust and recognition. And I think when people are attuned to noticing the good moments and really affirming like their colleagues and their team members, that contributes to so much of how people show up at work. And I think when people fail to be recognized for their work, it can have a negative impact. And so I love how you talked about like leveraging the tools that are out there to create that sense of trust and community and support really amongst your team members. I think that's a fantastic tool. It also gives peer recognition and peer feedback, I think also builds really important skills amongst your team as well, in terms of knowing how to communicate things that they're doing really well and also reinforce those like good behaviors as well. So glad that you're doing it. I don't hear about that often, especially larger teams. I think with smaller teams, it may be, you know, a little easier to maintain that, but team of 900, it's no small feat.
You know, you asked the question about being an effective coach. And I think being an effective coach really is about delivering, you know, it involves delivering great feedback. It's hard to create a culture where everyone will use the phrase feedback is a gift, you know, until you get it. Right? It's really hard to create a culture of great feedback. And I think it requires meticulous preparation to be a good coach, to be able to do this. Because I can actually remember a situation where I was being given feedback by a leader of mine, not at this organization, but, you know, a few organizations ago for me. I am relentless in asking for feedback, you know, so I ask for input and I try to make it easy for the giver. So I ask for feedback about a specific thing. So Naomi, can you please give me feedback on the speed of my speaking during our podcast? So it becomes, you know, easier rather than just you having to come up with something. And I remember asking a leader of mine previously, like, what specific skills did I need to get to the next level of the organization? And I was in a role at that time that required no financial knowledge, certainly to be able to manage a budget. But the leader at the time said to me, well, Kira, I think you could probably learn to up your game in finance. I'm like, you do realize a CPA, like I am actually an accountant. And it was clear they hadn't done their homework. They weren't really thoughtful about providing that feedback. And from that moment on, my trust in the feedback that I was getting from this person was lost. And so when you talk about trust, it's a loop with feedback. You can give feedback if you're in a trusted relationship, but if you're not honest about your feedback, the trust then goes down and you're not able to kind of live that cycle. Because I can remember where I was sitting, what I was wearing, and how I was feeling when I got that feedback. And that was, I'm not going to say how many years ago, but it was not last year. It was some time ago.
Yeah. And I think even being able to just to like connect this to also personal like feedback that you have amongst relationships in your life outside of the workplace, I also think it is a really big contributing factor to like having really strong friendships, right? And I think so much of what's lost when you're unable to give proper feedback is a sense of resentment of you holding back things that could actually like bring your relationship to the next level. You mentioned earlier in your career when you were deciding between a career transition or like what you wanted to do next. And you mentioned that you had a coach, you had a career coach. And in that role, being able to receive like tactical feedback, or whether you're in a sports environment, to get even like 1% better. What are some like really helpful things to know as you prepare to give feedback or think about instituting that at a greater level?
You know, it's, if you're not a genuine, authentic person, you know, and delivering this, people can see through it right away, which is where I think the like meticulous prep really makes sense. Like, you want to be able to show you've done your research, you know what's important to the person who you're delivering feedback to, and you deliver it in a way that they're going to receive it in the spirit of which it's intended. You know, I remember an email I got once, you know, I'm going to call out this woman, Ruth Raymond, sent me an email about with some feedback once, I'm going to say 15 years ago. And the email started out with, please accept this feedback in the spirit with which it's intended to help us both work on this project better. And like, it was one of the most meaningful phrases. And I hear something like that, I write it down and I keep those things, you know, next to me. And so I think people know what your intentions are when you're delivering feedback. So you've got to be really, really genuine. You know, I've taught a lot of classes on coaching, and I always ask, the very first question I ask is to have people tell me about the best coach you've ever had. And, you know, people in groups for a little bit and then they'll come back. And it's very rare that someone comes after that and says, oh, my best coach was somebody who helped me, you know, shoot better from the elbow, or, you know, somebody who helped me with my endurance, you know, after, you know, for overtime. It's always about how they made them feel, or, you know, the feedback that they gave them that helped them, you know, be a better teammate, or it's the coach that drove, you know, a really great team environment. So when I'm thinking about coaching somebody and delivering feedback, I often think about, how does it make somebody feel? Even if it's going to be feedback that they may not want to hear, I think about, I want them to leave feeling that I'm invested in them being better. I'm not giving them this feedback because I want them to feel bad about it. I'm giving them this feedback because I want them to think, okay, now how are Kira and I, how's Kira going to hold me accountable? Or what are we going to do to make sure that the next piece of feedback is how I've progressed? And so I think you have to be really purposeful in how you want someone to feel. And then I think outside of the coaching feedback experience, you have to live what you coach. You know, I can't be giving Naomi feedback about being, you know, genuine and being a better communicator, and then having you see me in a meeting afterwards, you know, berating somebody.
That's a great example. And I really appreciate all these stories and moments that you've remembered from like 20 years ago, 15, 20 years ago.
You know, it's so funny. I think, you know, any great strength can also be your weakness. And as my husband and my two boys remind me, like, I have an elephantine memory, and things don't always go, you know, slide back or let them go. And so, yes, I remember these things that I think my family and probably my colleagues wished I didn't.
That's great. I mentioned earlier that purpose specifically is not attached to a job, like a specific job that you have or an opportunity. And I'm wondering, when you think about the different positions that you hold, whether it's the chief people officer role, you're also a board member in two organizations, or as a leader of a sport, or as a mother, a wife, like, what drives you every day in the different positions that you hold? What do you, when you think about your purpose, what do you think about?
Underlying my purpose, I think, is authenticity. Maybe because I have a terrible poker face, so people know if I'm not being authentic and transparent about things. But I do think my purpose is really about being honest in helping people develop and grow. Mm-hmm. And so I do think that, you know, like, I joined the, you know, the Heart Institute as a, you know, as a board member, because I've had a lot of family members impacted by heart health, but I also knew I could contribute because I'd worked in a research organization for many years. I'd been a people trainer. And so again, I try to think about how can I have an impact that brings in, you know, just a unique set of skills to what it is that that I'm applying them to, you know. And if I think about my boys at home, like one of my older son, you know, is started out as a camp counselor a year and a half, 2 years ago. And in a period of 18 months, you know, he went from being a counselor in training to a junior counselor, to a senior counselor, to a director, you know, in a record period of time, because he asks good questions and he cares about people. You know, those are things you just can't teach in a course. And so when I think about the purpose, it's about making some of those innate values and skills, you know, embedded in people and just helping to bring out what they already have. I'm not going to teach them to do that, but I'm going to make sure they know how valuable those skills are.
And they have very likely experienced someone do the same for them, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The way that you have for your children. You mentioned your role as a board member, and I think just, you know, big themes in this conversation have been around coaching, have been around supporting others. Because of the background that you have and your career in sports, your commitment to health, I think is another fundamental thing, and is also a very valuable leadership perspective. Could you share like the importance and the significance of your board position, specifically like the board of the Ottawa Heart Institute and chair of the Heart Institute Research Corporation? Like, what insights have you gained regarding health, especially women's heart health and the importance of self-care specifically?
Great question. You know, just as a complete aside, I did some training the other day with my colleagues, and they taught us that if you say great question, you should stop saying great question, because then when you don't say it the next time, people will think it wasn't a very good question. So, okay, maybe cut that part out, Naomi, but, and maybe I will do a, you know, a public service announcement right now about women's heart health, because it's something I'm really passionate about, because women are underdiagnosed, treated, researched, you know, and underaware of their own heart health. You know, you may not know this, but, you know, heart disease is the number one killer of women. And it's not the number one killer of women by like 2%. It's actually it's the number one killer of women by a big gap. And, you know, women aren't always great at taking care of themselves and knowing the signs. And women have unique factors and unique symptoms when it comes to heart health. And so I'm not a doctor, so I'm not going to, you know, tell you what the specifics are, but I guess I'm just going to use this moment to encourage every woman who is listening to this to look up what those symptoms are. You can take a look at the Women's Heart Health Alliance program. Just increase your knowledge, know your numbers around cholesterol and lipids, because I want everyone, you know, to have a long, happy, healthy life. And I think coming back to the question you actually asked me, so thank you for giving me a 2-minute PSA moment there. You know, I learned pretty early on in this particular board experience that having a unique non-traditional path to the board is just as valuable as it is in any other leadership capacity. I've told this story maybe once before. My very first board meeting at the Heart Institute, I didn't know a lot about provincial healthcare. And so I was so nervous about coming to the board. And I think I stayed up all night reading stuff on how hospitals are funded and all this stuff, and which made me a little bit late for the meeting. And I'm driving around finding parking, and I get in and I sit down, you know, with all my papers that I printed off and all these notes that I made. I was way overprepared and suffering from major imposter syndrome. And I sit down, and this person next to me goes to shake my hand and says, "You must be the new board member, Kira. I'm Dalton McGuinty." And for those of you who don't live in Ontario, because I think globally, you know, you've got global listeners, Naomi, good for you. He used to be the premier of Ontario, which means he used to run the provincial healthcare system. So here's somebody with 15 years of experience and me having 15 hours, you know, of experience.
And shuffling paper.
Me shuffling paper trying to learn this. So the meeting's over and I say to the board chair, you know, "Hey, board chair, like, I'm never going to have this level of experience. And he says to me, of course you're not. We didn't bring you on the board because of that. You know, our board is diverse and we want people with completely different backgrounds to add to that experience. You're, you know, running sports organizations, you lead people, you know, research, and that's what we want you to bring to the table. I know that was a really long story, Naomi, but it was the premise there is that different background is a benefit in so many different ways. You just always have to be thinking creatively about how you apply it and not feel like an imposter because you don't have the same experience as somebody next to you. I think that's really important to keep at the front of your mind.
How do you, are you someone who writes a lot? Like what are the ways that you think intentionally about your past experiences and how you can position, because really it's like, it sounds like it's a positioning game, right? How you can position yourself in those different environments. It relates to another thing I'm curious about, which is what's the best investment in yourself that you've made? And if it is at all related in how you've been able to, you know, maneuver and bring incredible amounts of value in whatever space that you're in.
I don't write much, but my brain is really, really active, you know, and sometimes the only way to get it out of my brain is to just write it on a piece of paper, but I don't usually go back to that piece of paper. Like my brain is constantly just trying to pull together information from different sources to come up with a trend or an insight. And I think there's probably two areas of investment that I've made that I'll mention. One would be, you know, just in different education, you know, like taking, you know, courses in things that are not related to what you're doing. And so as an accountant, I'm required to do PD every year in order to keep my accounting up. And I know it's always funny, like I haven't really practiced, but it's important to me to keep it up just in case one day I choose to be an accountant.
Yeah.
But you know, when I do the PD, I think, what do I not know much about? And I'm like, I don't know enough and a lot about taxes. Okay. I'm going to learn about that. Or I don't know a lot about, you know, the neuro connections with your brain and how that helps you become a better leader. So I try to take things that are seemingly unrelated. The other investment that I always encourage people to do, and I've said this one a lot, is that when you get a bonus or like an unexpected sum of money, you should always buy something physical that you can have as a reminder that hard work pays off. You know, I have an amazing team member. When I asked her, you know, I'd given her a bonus a few years ago, and I said, what are you going to do? What are you going to do with this? And she said, oh, we're going to buy a new toilet. And I said, I was like, oh, okay, I can appreciate that. But I've also encouraged you, even if it's $50, you know, of this bonus, I want you to go buy something that you wouldn't buy, that's a luxury, that every time you look at it, you can say, hard work pays off. And it's a memory of what you did and how you felt, you know, when you were rewarded. So again, it's not just what you did, but how you felt when you were rewarded. And I can say, I have two pairs of ridiculous shoes, but every time I wear them, I'm reminded like I did this and I was recognized for it. And this is what I did when I was recognized.
That's so good. And it was probably one of those advanced toilets that have filtered water and stuff.
Maybe. I should, you know, I'm going to go back and ask her about it today just so that I can find that answer out, Naomi.
What a great way to end. I'm wondering I don't want to end there because I think that was a great piece of feedback. And I think that was just so funny. So people can, you know, laugh and enjoy that. And I also want to know, because you talked about investing in really things that you're curious about, right? Whether it's psychology, brain health, women's health, taxes. what are like two things that you have been really curious about lately in your field or outside of your field?
Yeah, this is maybe an unusual answer, but just yesterday I asked a friend to teach me how to do cryptic crosswords. Like I am a crossword junkie. I love them. And I always see the cryptic crossword in the Globe and Mail on Saturdays. And I've learned that these crosswords are like deliberately misleading and they force you to think differently. So you have to be creative and think about things beneath the surface. And for me, it's like forced curiosity. I am having a hard time learning it because it's forcing me to think completely different. So I'm curious right now about cryptic crosswords. And I'm also really curious about development because I am living the craziness of teenage boys in my home life. So those are the things I'm curious about right now.
I love it. I love it. Thank you so much, Kira. It was such a pleasure to meet you, to have this conversation, and to have it documented so that it could really benefit others on their non-traditional paths or people who are considering other developmental opportunities in their own organizations. And so it was a pleasure, Kira. Thank you so much for being here. And thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of the Power of Why podcast. We'll catch you in the next one.
Thanks, Naomi. You were great questions.
Thank you for listening to the Power of Why podcast. You can find the show notes at www.naomihiley.com. And if you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to the Power of Why on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. This episode was brought to you in collaboration with Invest Ottawa. And with critical support from BDC Capital's Thrive Venture Fund, the title sponsor of International Women's Month 2024, we've teamed up to produce this special series featuring six inspirational leaders. Visit www.investottawa.ca/IWM to learn more.